I'm Brett Hayworth, and welcome to What's a Frequency, our weekly show on Siouxland Public Media. The State Conference of the Iowa Library Association is being held the first week in October in Sioux City at the Downtown Convention Center. Librarians from all over the state came to Sioux City, which had not been the host site for at least 15 years. Sioux City Public Library Director Helen Rigdon said it was a nice accomplishment for the state conference to come to the city, as library workers and others make for a vibrant, buzzing event here today. Sam Helmick is the 2025-26 year president of the American Library Association. Helmick is the Community and Access Services Coordinator at the Iowa City Public Library, and she also is at the conference. Helmick was a member of the ALA Executive Board until earlier this month at the end of their term, when chosen for the presidential post, and is also immediate past president of the Iowa Library Association. Do I have that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So for this edition of What's a Frequency, I'm at the Convention Center to meet with Sam Helmick and Helen Rigdon to discuss the state of libraries locally and nationally, the value of books, and much more. So thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
It's a delight to be with you.
Thank you. And I want to start with you, Sam. I'm going to begin with something that I swear is not ingratiating. I'm not trying to suck up or anything like that. But I love the Iowa City Library. My daughter is a senior at the University of Iowa, and she finally got a library card over the last year, and we've gone several times over the last year. So I was very impressed at the breadth of everything that you have in there. It's way beyond books. The one that really caught my eye was that people can check out pieces of art to take into their homes or apartments and such, and there's all kinds of digital media. There's all more than that. So Sam, can you speak to the breadth of the offerings in Iowa City and what modern libraries are trying to do to serve their communities?
Absolutely. It has been humbling to be a staff member at the Iowa City Public Library for about 5 years. It is the highest circulating per capita and highest participating in program per capita library in the state of Iowa, despite having only one institution and a bookmobile, which is the team that I'm responsible for beyond circulation and public relations and marketing. So this question and your experience is right in my heart, because we go to the student fairs every single year to sign up students so that they can complement their academic library cards with those nice public library cards, be ingratiated to the community, maybe happen to stay for a little while, and then on the second floor of our building hosts the UNESCO City of Literature, and just down the street the Iowa Writers Workshop. So it's a literate community, and it's a joy to get book recommendations on my side of the desk as much as theirs.
Mm-hmm. So, but talk about like how libraries are becoming more that, not just a place to get books.
Right. So libraries have always been the cornerstone of democracy since our founders recognized that that mechanism would probably be useful for our unique form of government. So us continuing to grow at the pace of our communities makes sense. In the Iowa City Public Library, we have a digital media lab, we have a teen center, we have outreach services, we have digital services in your pocket, so that if you're trying to develop skills, you're listening to an audiobook at 3 o'clock in the morning in your pajamas, or you're trying to build a new business, learn a new language, find a new recipe, we're there to meet your goals and support you regardless of what that goal is. And the beating heart of any library is its staff that are there to equip you with 21st century skills and thought partnership and encouragement to accomplish those goals.
And at this point, I want to insert a plug for Interlibrary Loan. I live in a smaller town outside of Sioux City, and I basically am using Interlibrary Loan probably twice a year for the last several years, and it's fantastic. I love that. I guess to explain Interlibrary, that's like if they don't have the book currently at a library, then they seek out other libraries, correct?
That's a great question. Your federal tax dollars and your state tax dollars support a program called Open Access, which means that all of the 544 public libraries in the state of Iowa can borrow from each other. We also have more public libraries per capita than any other state in the nation, and at least 75% of Iowans own a library card. I'm up to about 135. But through your
personally?
Federal tax... Yes,
you
personally.
Have 135.
Okay. Yeah, I'm about a third of the way there. I'm excited.
Okay.
And so whether you're borrowing from other libraries in the state or you're borrowing outside of the state, we borrow from other countries. In fact, your Institute for Museum and Library Services dollars support your state library, which then creates this consortium for all of us to double and triple the effect of our tax dollars so that we can all enjoy each other's collections.
And this will be at the end my little digression here on interlibrary loan, but the thing that tickles me the most is for the books that I've been getting, I don't know why this is, but they seem to have come from very small libraries in Iowa, like in North Iowa, like towns of like 700 to 1,000 people. they have the book, like the only place in the state that apparently people have it. So I just love that.
Right. We have two floors of material at the Iowa City Public Library, and we are considered a super borrower from all the wonderful ruler and small libraries across the state that have unique collections that really complement our own. So you're right. It benefits all sizes of libraries, and you never really know. One of my favorite things to do is to open the book with the patron and say, oh, all the way from the wilds of Urbandale or Fairfield.
That's exactly where, when I get it, that's the first thing I look at. Where did it come from? And sorry, back to where I was, I guess. For you, Helen Rigdon, I have similar kudos for the Sioux City Public Library. Several friends who are big users of it, and it's making me look at how I, broadening mind for like digital DVD and such. I'm pretty much books and not much, but they rave about it, and so kudos to your library for the
things. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Can you, either of you, or Helen or Sam, give an overview for when libraries got more expansive? Like, what options were first? I don't know if we're talking the 1950s, 60s, like when, but like, what were the first options beyond books, so to speak, and then how has that kind of built over the years? Like, what sort of elements have been stacked on there?
I think the very first probably innovation came with the Gates computers. He had a huge grant that provided, and they were Gateway computers here from Sioux City, and to all the public libraries in the nation. And this was just at the start, it was probably in the 80s, of the internet. And many people, a lot of people, we still have some that don't have access, but didn't have access, and it was new. And so with that really kind of started our technology thing. They showed up in a box. You had to learn how to do it. No one knew. So, but I think that was one of the first things. And we've just broadened since then. We've gone to the digital books, digital audio books. We even just started a library of things at Sioux City.
We did a news piece on that. Please explain that.
What that is, it's a collection of items, and it ranges from, we have a radon meter that's very popular, tree lopper, they love it.
Were you cut off the top
of
the tree?
Well, the smaller branches.
Okay.
We have metal detectors. We got a huge wait list on that. Everyone wants to try one. Telescope. We have sewing machine. Well, let's see, what else do we have? Oh, and we're just getting ready to bring out for the winter season a board game collection. So
the things would be some household or specialty items that people don't necessarily, that you might use them once or twice.
Yeah, we feel it kind of feeds into sustainability. Yeah, because, if you have a radon meter, you don't want it all the time. So, we feel like, someone comes in, checks it out for a week, and then they bring it back. And it's worked great. Our friends at the library has funded it so far for us.
Any other thoughts on that, Sam, of how elements have been added over the years?
I think you could go back to 150 years ago in the time of Dewey or even like John Cotton Dana and think about how library services were held between you and another human being. The stacks were closed. We didn't have children's departments. We weren't really thinking about them as anything other than cold storage information. And then about 150 years ago, we recognized with the onset of Dewey, Carnegie, Dana, that the community had the right to come in and breathe life into those collections and services and opportunities, which is why things like the Gates Foundation, things like response to the pandemic, whether that was circulating materials in a parking lot, giving you make and take kits to keep yourselves sane and entertained with your children, or even virtually connecting through learning opportunities, libraries are really good and uniquely positioned to not only meet the pace and needs of society, but to anticipate them and support them. I love your try before you buy, which really feeds into not only sustainability, but economic development. Because if I do want a metal detector, and I do want to be added to the hold list, if that's okay to mention right now, I want to test it before I would purchase it for my own household.
Yeah, and there is a metal detecting club here in Sioux City, and they meet in the library, and they were very excited when they saw we had that. So.
One more follow-up on the library. Thanks for you, Helen. How popular has it been? Like, how is it? Is it about a year old, 6 months old?
We started in July.
Okay.
And we've already had to order more telescopes, tripods, and a metal detector. We ordered another one of those. Yeah, we just have things like that. And just to bring people together also, a lot of times people don't have access to games or, family time. So, Yeah.
Thank you. And the voice you just heard there was Helen Rigdon. She's the director of the Sioux City Public Library. Do you look like you have something more, Sam?
Oh, I just feel that it's wonderful that you compliment the point that some folks don't have access to those physical resources, but some folks don't have access to community, and neighbors become thought partners and collaborators and friends at a library because you create events that are learning opportunities. The curation of that is as important as the curation and the context found in a collection.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I want to read, I went to the American Library Association website. Coincidentally, my frequency show from either last week or the week before was on the Woodbury County library system. So it's in rural towns. So some small towns don't have their own individual libraries, but it's a county system and the bookmobile. So I did, went out and saw they're just hitting their 75th anniversary of go to kwit.org. What's the frequency to hear that? I loved it. Went out to Lawton Bronson and got the stop of the bookmobile that Friday morning. So anyway, I guess we're on libraries in like two of the last three episodes. So go for that. Working on that show on the bookmobile, I went to the American Library Association. And they had some really good stats on bookmobiles, which I didn't know, which were very helpful to the show. I want also to share, for our purposes here with you, Helen and Sam, here's a passage from the website. The ALA, since the late 1800s, has been the trusted voice for academic, public, school, government, and special libraries, advocating for the profession and the library's role in enhancing learning and ensuring access to information for all. And I know we've kind of had these some overview comments, but just as I read that, anything that pops in your mind?
It's very humbling to be the president of the American Library Association at the time that it's about to turn 150 years old, because it is the accrediting body and the skill-developing body for library workers and information professionals, and with the onset of AI, probably intelligence engineers. And when we think about the fact that we live in an information age, access to information is access to opportunity, and our founders recognized that. Being an Iowan makes it extra special, too, because the Library Bill of Rights was penned in Iowa in 1938 by Des Moines Public Library Director Forrest Spaulding, and then adopted a year later by the American Library Association to be the international standard of free people reading freely. So it's an Iowa legacy, and to be able to uphold that and champion it to 46,000 members who are serving millions around the globe is somewhat humbling.
Well, I was just going to say, part of ALA's, I guess, their mission is they have a wonderful website full of so much information. And the smaller libraries, they don't know where to go to get help on certain things. And they have freedom to read information. They have banned books. What to do if you're being censored. I mean, there is so much valuable information. And for a small town librarian that, you know, they're kind of just out there by themselves, it's just wonderful. And even, you know, I've been in libraries for a while, but I like to go, and there's always something new on it. So they're not just, you know, they're the organization, but they also have that support.
Go ahead, Sam.
I absolutely agree. Yes, in many cases, library associations, though they began as professional networks, have served as a firewall between pernicious policy or legislation and the library communities that libraries are called to serve. However, ALA, at its core, just like most professional networks, are there to amplify, uplift, and support the skills that are necessary to keep the profession relevant and supportive to America's communities. And that includes everything from writing well policy, working with library boards and city councils, working with artificial intelligence, how to program for teenagers or tweens with a shoestring budget, to outreach with book bikes, bookmobiles, and just pop-up tents.
Thank you, Sam Hellman. Now we're back for this episode of What's Your Frequency at the State Conference of the Iowa Public Library Association. It's being held at the Sioux City Convention Center this year. My guests are Sioux City Public Library Director Helen Rigdon and Sam Helmut, who works at the Iowa City Public Library and is president of the American Library Association for the 2025-26 year. To get to know you each a little bit better, I'm assuming you're both big readers. I think that's a fair assumption, okay? I don't know who wants to go first here, so I'm going to put three together. I shouldn't do three together. What was the first book you really loved? What genre do you most like? And what is your all-time favorite book? Looks like Helen's ready to go.
Well, my staff makes fun of me. I'm Stephen King is my favorite author in the world, and my favorite book is The Stand of his. And I reread it during COVID. That was scary. But, you know, and my first book that I can't think, probably, oh, I know. When I was little and my mom would take us to the public library, she'd go get groceries and
Where did you grow up, by the way?
I'm Coffeyville, Kansas.
Okay.
So my mom would drop us off. It was in a Carnegie, and the kids, of course, was downstairs, and we couldn't go upstairs. But they had a series of books, and this will age me, but it was called Cherry Ames, RN. And I read those and read those and read those. I didn't want to be a nurse, but I liked them. So. Mm-hmm. But that was my first, yeah. We would go and just spend hours and hours and hours at the library.
So it's not too surprising that your career eventually came there.
Yeah. It was what I kind of wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. How about you, Sam? Are you ready? First book that you loved, your main genre that you read.
So I grew up in a fairly faith-based family and community. So to be honest with you, one of the books that really impressed me was in the fourth grade. We were reading the book of John in the New Testament. And it was, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And in the same, there in the beginning was God. And all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. And I sat with that first chapter of John for a long time. I'm like, what do you mean, like, words have power? And what do you mean, like, words could be God? And I remember, like, baking the noodle of my English teacher, like, Sam, can we move on with the lesson? And I'm like, nope, I'm ready to pause here. And for the last, 35 years of my life, that book is still baking my brain and making me think about the power of words and what we can accomplish with them. And so that might not be the ideal answer, because it's not something you can necessarily check out and pluck. I mean, I guess you could check it out, but I'm still ruminating on it. I'm recently reading the Chronicles of Prydain series, because I missed those as a child, and so I've really been enjoying those a lot. I'm Jane Austen trash. You give me anything by Jane Austen or anything that's like Regency romance, and I'm your guy. And then lastly, I, weirdly enough, read nonfiction more than anything, because I have a very short attention span, and nonfiction helps with that.
Okay, thank you. So for you, Sam and Helen, what is the value of reading? Like, what is that? That's the question. What is the value of reading?
I think it just comes from, it starts when your children are little and your parents. My boys, I read to them all the time. This was back before necessarily even books on tape. And so when we took trips, I would read stories to them. I mean, I read them, and I had boys, and they heard every book of The Little House on the Prairie. They, you know, all the Wizard of Oz books. I mean, we read them all. And I honestly think that's the key to children's success as they grow up, is that you hear those words, you gain empathy, you gain understanding of the broader world. And that is so important. And I think that's where the library comes in, because we offer, you know, parents can't afford to buy all the books, but we have them, and you can check them out and take them home. And, you know, we support also, we have 1,000 books before kindergarten to help parents read to their children. And that's a program through ALA. And there's just a lot of things like that that the library does that supports the parents and brings that value to them.
Thank you. How about you, for you, Sam? What's the value of reading?
The value of reading is that literacy and language are the DNA of any culture or society, and it's the means by which you will navigate the rest of your life. So developing skills in that, including empathy, connection, the value in seeing stories that represent yourself, but even maybe more importantly, stories that represent experiences that you will never have, often at the cheaper tuition of a third-person narrative, you know, is incredibly important for understanding the world around you and developing creativity. And then I would remind us that there are very many forms of literacy. The ebooks and the audiobooks that we download at the libraries that we all hold library cards to are essential. We're in this new printing press era, like a new renaissance, essentially, where I can now I can listen to books, I can enjoy literacy while washing the dishes, driving my truck, and I don't think that we've really figured out yet the ken or the impact of being able to listen to literature all the time, and then learning opportunities. Like, I still get Betty Crocker cakes and crack that egg because I want the literacy and learning and understanding of what it's like to not bake it from scratch, Helen, but at least to feel like I'm a baker and to be learning skills and measuring things and shoving it in the oven. And so when we do that through our classes, our kitchenettes at public libraries, when we're, you know, teaching people how to use a metal detector, these are different forms of literacy that are also essential to the reader's life.
Thank you, Sam. And I'm going to make another digression. I wasn't planning on this, but your baking analogy, I just want to say from my small town library where I go, here's an example of the breadth of libraries. Bundt cakes and such. So I don't know if you guys have seen that ever before. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of little libraries that have collected cake pans. People donate them. We don't have them because we're just scared they'll just get, they'll be used so much they could get messed up. But yeah, there's a lot of little libraries and people love them. You know, they have all the different characters for kids' birthdays, you know, so you can make them their cakes.
Yes,
so.
It's like a face of Elmo or something like that.
Yeah. Big Bird, you know. Right, but right. So.
And it's respecting the fact that our taxpayers are, you know, really trying to make their dollars go, and we want to make that tax dollar work four or five times. So if I'm going to only use an Elmo cake once, I don't want to buy a $40 pan. And if I do help buy that $40 pan, I want 40 other people to get to enjoy it and make use of it too.
Right. Thank you. And again, the reason that we're here for what's frequency at the Sioux City Convention Center is because of the State Library Association conference. And now I guess this is the point where I wanted, like, please share how many people are at the conference. It runs, so this airs tomorrow on Friday. The conference ends on Friday, but just what happens at the state conference? It looks like there's breakout sessions. I see lots of booths and such. What's this? Either one of you, please.
Well, we have about 260, 265 came. And when you were talking about how long it's been since they've been here in Sioux City, we heard today the actual number is 21 years. So, okay. To me, going to a conference, yes, we have breakout sessions and we all learn things from those, but it's the networking. I mean, and especially again for some of the smaller libraries, they don't have the resource to know that, well, they're not just alone facing the same issues that we all have, big or small. And it's just valuable. So we have breakout sessions. We had a screening of the movie The Librarians last night at the Orpheum. We had the welcome reception. Today's the big day with all the sessions. There's we have vendors from all over that come, different companies that are essential to libraries. And so, again, some of the smaller libraries can visit with them and get materials or talk about if, you know, they want to maybe do a new area in their library. So we have, like, architects here. We have library furniture vendors. And so then tomorrow we'll wrap up. We have sessions in the morning. Then it ends, I think, at 1 after lunch. But oh, and I forgot, tonight we're doing the board game and trivia night. And for
I
people,
bet librarians are great at trivia.
Yeah. Well, Michael Maxwell, my adult services, he does them quarterly at Buffalo Alice for the library. And we have like 100, we're about to outgrow it. We don't know what we're going to do, but yeah, they love it.
Well, it's also just good for the heart, right? We're right between September, which is Library Card Sign-Up Month. We've just finished summer reading. We're heading into the academic year. Next week will be the National Recognition of Banned Books Week and the Freedom to Read Day. And so coming together as community to learn from each other, to, and as we say in the industry, borrow ideas from one another, is really edifying. And I'm really glad that practitioners of libraries around the state get together, like firefighters or like the Iowa Business Council, and that we can be in this beautiful part of the state where a lot of wonderful library conversations are happening locally, but also at Des Moines, so we can build those relationships and better understand each other and recognize how we can continue to help Iowans thrive by making sure that they have robust and effective public libraries, school libraries, academic libraries, and museums.
Okay. Thank you, and this is maybe not a fair question to put you on the spot, but for each of you, is there one breakout session that you're going to make sure you absolutely go to here?
I'm the local arrangement chair, so I haven't got to even look at what I've been responsible. I have a committee, but the technology, we have to supply in the rooms, and we already have one computer crash, so I'm sitting here going, I don't know what's going on out there in those rooms, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the vendor reception and going through the vendor hall, but Yeah, there was one this afternoon. Now I can't think of my name. My staff, because we closed the library today. My board approved it, and this is their. Most of them have never got to go to a professional conference, so they were very excited. They're all here and having a good time. But yeah, I don't know. I'd have to really look at the schedule, I guess.
So the problem really is that there's always like five great sessions at the same time, and we haven't figured out how to clone ourselves yet. Yeah. So that networking element that's going on between sessions is really crucial. But I think I always have loved the frontline staff training, whether it's trauma-informed care, good customer service, because we all know that learning and literacy are vulnerable processes. And the fact that we are equipping Iowa librarians to support you, whether you're finding a job, developing a business, filling out government forms, trying to find like telehealth support, they're going to be there for you, equipped not only with those 21st century digital and knowledgeable skills, but they're also going to be doing it in a way that helps you feel at ease and welcome in your local library.
Thank you, Sam Helmick. And we're back for this episode of What's Your Frequency? We're at the State Conference of the Iowa Library Association that's being held at the Sioux City Convention Center. My guests are Sam Helmick, who works at the Iowa City Public Library and is president of the American Library Association for this year, and also Helen Rigdon, who is the Sioux City Public Library Director. I wanted to, so Sam, you're the past president of the Iowa Library Association, as we said earlier, and now lead the American Library Association. That perhaps gives you some oversight, perhaps, for how librarians are feeling about their jobs. What is the mood of librarians at a time when some people are wanting to limit the books that people can read, whether that's at a city library or a school library?
So I think most people get into public service because they love and they have a service heart for the public. And so it's troubling at least twofold, right? The first is that libraries were meant to be institutions where we could come together to lean into difficult conversations, learn about the world around us, and lift ourselves up with access to information. And we're facing a time where folks need that probably more than ever in my adult life, perhaps more than ever in the history of our nation, because we live in an information age and our own national security is, you know, dedicated to the idea that we have an informed constituency. So to answer your question, I think that librarians are first troubled for their communities because they're not being equipped with the resources they need to serve them. And then we're seeing this unmitigated castigation of library workers who are often the most publicly trusted face of government being mischaracterized and profiled, threatened, harassed, in a time where really what they're really, you know, trying to accomplish is just uplifting Iowans across the state and patrons across the nation. So it's sort of this precarious thing where your heart is sort of broken because of the precarious nature of not only murky legislation that no longer seems to trust Iowans and their neighbors to manage the literacy and learning life of their own home and wants to kind of like dictate that for their neighbor, but then you also just have precarious funding and a seemingly disappreciation for the fact that for every dollar that is invested in a library in the United States, you get on average a 5 to 9 return on investment back. That feels like good business, and I love you both, but if I was getting that in my 401k, we would be having this interview from Hawaii.
Yeah.
So the fact that we're not investing in our communities this way, investing in our libraries, is very troubling to anybody who recognizes their use and impact.
Okay. Go ahead, Helen.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, your radio station and your public media is going through the same challenges, and it just seems like, you know, let's take all the good things and break them. And I don't know why. I mean, you know, they don't want educated children. They don't want educated adults. And it's just, like you said, heartbreaking. It just sometimes just makes you want to cry. And it's just sad.
I know our time is short, but to just kind of bounce off what you're saying, Helen, we know that life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are in the foundation of our nation. And I'm not quite sure how you can do that without unfettered, unbarriered, free freedom of discovery and inquiry and access to knowledge and information. So it does feel like if it's not intentional, it's at least counterthetical to what we have principled our nation upon.
So some of the people that want to lessen what books can be read by people, some of them are legislators, some of them are people, rank and file people, you know, our fellow residents of our towns. Sometimes they push back on the phrasing that they are banning books. And does that verbiage matter, whether it's called book banning or censorship, does that matter to you?
It does. I had this discussion with one of our local legislators at the state capitol a couple years ago, and he claimed they were not banning books, and he goes, they can still get them somewhere else, or they can, you know, we'll put them behind the desk. And I said, but you're still banning them from the kids that need them. And I said, if somebody is LGBTQ plus and they are trying to find out a book about themselves, I said, they can't get it. They're, you know, they don't want to go up and expose if they, you know, don't know where they're at. It was a tough conversation. I did not convince them of the fact that they were wrong, but we keep trying.
Well, I think education is key in recognizing the distinctions between challenging a book, banning a book, and then the chilling effect that is created in this environment where we're trying to determine whether ideas are dangerous, whether we have to lean into them regardless of their implications, and whether we're equipping our Iowans how to think versus what to think. And so, yeah, I think the distinctions of all three are necessary, but when you talk about, well, somebody can purchase a book, that's privilege speaking, and it's the opposite point of what a public's collection in a library is supposed to accomplish. When you talk about the fact that now I can ask permission to get that book, censorship is like a hammer looking for a nail. The books that they want to put behind the desk today will only grow. That list will only continue to grow. And so I guess for me, I would rather honor and respect the autonomy of the local person, the local family, the local library, and let my neighbor make those determinations for themselves, and ask that is reciprocated by trusting me to navigate my own intellectual life too.
One thing I hear frequently is that if a person doesn't like a book, don't read it, but let others have the opportunity to read it.
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, we don't force the books into your hand. We don't make you check those books out. If you don't like it, leave it on the shelf. And I don't understand that mindset that, you know, it has to be their way or the highway, and basically. And it's frustrating. You know, they don't see value in those books because they don't feel like it adds any value to their lives. Well, maybe it doesn't, but it's not going to hurt anybody by being there available for the person that needs it.
Well, it's also a little bit centrical, right? I think community is about being others focused. Public services are about serving the all to the best impact of the most possible. So I drive past the pickleball court and the running path of my local park, and I do not use either, but I'm very grateful that they exist for everybody in my community. Similarly, books on exercise or kale shakes, not checking those things out from my library, but I'm really grateful that they're there for others, because at the end of the day, we are a society, we are a community, and we've created a pact that we're in this together, and I don't get to make the decisions on who plays pickleball or who reads Stephen King. And I'm really grateful that I'm not the arbiter of choosing that for other people's lives.
But we do have a pickleball set you can check out at the Library of Things. I forgot that.
Okay, maybe I'm convinced I should try it now.
Okay, and one more on just talking about books that people are pushing to get removed. What might be one or two titles for each of you of books that you're just so surprised that is on a list that people want to no longer have available to people?
So I'm always nervous about this question, because as librarians, as practitioners of the First Amendment, my job is to protect the process by which you all get to make those determinations. So my favorite banned book might not have been written yet. It might be being checked out on a bookmobile or at the Sioux City Public Library sometime this week. It might not even be on a list yet, but it will be found to be contentious or concerning to somebody who needs the world to know that. So I honestly want to talk about the fact that librarians are here. It is a core professional value to push back against abridgment and censorship. That being said, the Banned Books Week between October 5th and 11th through the American Library Association's theme is Censorship is So 1984. And I think that's one of my most ironic books that I've seen around the state of Iowa being removed from school shelves, that our legislators may have read this in their AP courses when they were in high school in Iowa's high schools, but suddenly they do not trust their constituencies or their constituencies' educators or children to navigate these similar points.
Thank you, Sam. Helen?
Well, I think I was really shocked when it was I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and I was like, what's wrong with people? But, you know, and then they're trying to now take out parts of history And I find that really discouraging to me that, you know, well, slavery wasn't bad, and, you know, they want to just take it out and remove it from the Smithsonian. I mean, censorship is not just in books, but it's what people can see. And, you know, there's that saying that if we don't know our history, we're bound to repeat it. And that's what scares me. Now, on a side note, in Topeka, Kansas, in their free little libraries, somebody has put in every library in the city a copy of Animal Farm in 1984. And they say if someone takes it, a new one shows up. So they're out there.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. And the voice you heard there was Helen Rigdon.
Stay.
Back for one more segment here on this episode of What's a Frequency at the State Conference of the Iowa Library Association. It's being held at the Sioux City Convention Center. And my guests are Sioux City Public Library Director Helen Rigdon and Sam Helmick, who works for the Iowa City Public Library and also is the president of the American Library Association this year. I want to discuss funding, and I know one of you mentioned that earlier. Is the funding for libraries sufficient, or are there any funding changes, trends that are happening like in the Midwest or nationally?
Well, here in Iowa, the legislature put a cap on how much a city can raise their budget to 2%. They also, something about a rollback, I never knew how that really worked, but they took that away. So we're going to be in a tight budget year. Sometimes I feel like that they think the library's an easy place to cut. That, well, you know, you're not bringing in any revenue, but dollar for dollar, we give back every dollar of our budget in services to our patrons, but it doesn't even include the digital resources because those are paid separate and it's a consortium, so we don't count those. But it's just mind-boggling that, you know, it's one of the most beloved institutions, I think, for the most part. But they, you know, they see us as easy pickings, and that upsets me because I've had a conversation recently, and yeah.
So libraries serve a lot of functions. Clear back in the 1890s, I believe, I was digging up some old newspapers from my hometown library in Burlington, Iowa. What are we going to do with these teenagers who are lobbing spitballs at each other? Maybe we need a public library where there would be a place where they could utilize their time well. And I thought that was delightful because libraries are built and constructed in communities for a variety of reasons, but that one has always delighted me, and it really echoes throughout the annals of time that libraries serve as family time, they serve as spaces where you can meet as community groups to develop initiatives, they meet as spaces for entrepreneurs and economic developers so that they can continue to build their business and thrive in the state of Iowa. They often serve as the gap for the summer reading slide that students would fill between the school year ending and the school year beginning the next year. So I really think about how libraries are community anchor institutions, or maybe even like centers of community life, and to fail to invest in them feels like a significant missed opportunity investing into the people of Iowa. But then I will give you a few examples very briefly. House File 718, the tax bill, removed 97 locally petitioned, balloted, and passed levies that went specifically to libraries. Local communities wanted to fund their local values, and they did it for 15% of Iowa's libraries, and overnight that was eliminated without the option to do it again if the community still wanted to invest in their local libraries. The following year, a Senate study bill with an accompanying House bill tried to remove all codified funding for public libraries in the state with the change of a word. Okay? So we understand that the dismantling of publicly funded institutions that offer equitable and meaningful access to information and opportunity are under attack. And I am curious, when 75% of Iowans have a library card, we have more public libraries per capita than any other state in the nation, we penned the Library Bill of Rights, what is going on in Des Moines? 700 Board of Trustee members rocked up on Des Moines and said, please leave our beloved and cherished institutions be. They've been hit enough.
And I had I was going to ask a follow-up, but you pretty much addressed it the first time, Helen, when I asked about funding challenges. I know that the city, Sioux City Council and the mayor have said that this next budget year, which will be played out through next spring, will be very challenging based on some of those things that you said with state funding. So what that, how that all plays out remains to be seen, obviously. I did want to make sure, I should have had this, I don't know where in the show earlier, but just to explain it for people who may not know, Sioux City still has three branches, is that correct? Downtown and then Hamilton and Morningside?
Yes, we have what we call the Perry Creek branch that's off of Hamilton across from Hy-Vee on Hamilton. And then we have the Downtown Central Library where we run, we receive all our books. We process them there. We have our technical services. We house the offices. We have huge meeting rooms that, I mean, they're booked almost every night for organizations and groups. And then we have the Morningside branch, which was renovated in 2019, and it's a full-service library. The Perry Creek one's kind of a boutique library. You can just check out books, and we have Wi-Fi, but we don't have public access computers. But Morningside, when the renovation, we added in another smaller conference room and another study room, and the study room numbers are amazing because a lot of the students from Morningside come and use that branch. But yeah, we still have the three.
I used to live in the Morningside area, and I used that branch a lot. And it's so weird, what a weird coincidence, but I was in there on Tuesday for the first time, and you said 2000. I didn't really recognize it when you said 2018 with the makeover and stuff.
Yeah, so. Well, when I got here, it was so it was paneled, and it was dark, and oh, my goodness. And then when they got into the renovation, they're like, I don't know why this building never burnt down, because there was live wires just hanging up in the ceiling. But it's beautiful now. Yeah.
There's so much. The reason I love that library is so much open windows and such. Yeah. Like just great natural light. I love that library.
Well, it's in a beautiful setting, and you know it's in Peters Park, and that is dear to Sioux City, and you know it's a great branch, and yeah.
And so with my long, about 25 years as a journalist in Sioux City, with past times when there's been budget problems with the city of Sioux City or budget constraints, I know at various points, I think the Perry Creek has been on the chopping board here and there. That's kind of coming, like it comes up and goes, like it keeps being maintained.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going to happen. They talked about it last year. It was discussed, you know, and we have patrons that, you know, want to keep it, you know, I guess if push come to shove, you know, because it's our lowest use use library. But it's such a nice little library up there, so quiet and peaceful. Mm-hmm. But I think part of it's its location, too. It's kind of off the beaten path. But if you know it's there, it's great. But, yeah, I don't know. The city council, at their request, we signed a one-year lease, and it expires in February. So I guess we'll see. We just submitted our operating budget numbers, and then they'll start the process of looking at them. And, of course, we've got three new city councils going to be coming on. Mm-hmm. And, we've got some concerns. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens when that shakes out. So,
okay, thank you. And before I wrap this show here, I want to you might be interested in this, Sam, but we at Siouxland Public Media have a good connection with the Sioux City Public Library. I want to mention two ongoing programs that we have. Tuesday afternoon at 5:18 p.m. I know that I know the time because I announce in the afternoons. Check It Out, which is, I'll let you explain what Check It Out is, Helen.
Well, Check It Out is a staff will pick a book that they've liked, or maybe it's even an older book that they've just read, and they'll give a brief, like, two-minute synopsis of it and recommend it. And, I mean, Siouxland Public Radio, when I got here, I couldn't believe how great they are for us. And that one is just, they've been doing it for years. Yes, yeah. So way before I got here. It's a great program.
And then there's another one, and this is more, I think, they'll interview an author about how they wrote the book and everything, and those are a little bit longer form, and those are very interesting as well.
It is. They started it out. It's called First 50 Pages. They let us record at the Siouxland Public Media. Then they edit it for us, too. So, I mean, they do it all, and they make us sound good. But Jen and Kelsey, they're my staff that do that podcast. And somehow they have gotten on to some publicist lists. I mean, they have authors calling them now all the time wanting to do. They've done Dean Koontz. They've done... I mean, they have done people that are like in France, and they have done so many different people. I can't even, but they're all on our website and on your website,
right,
too.
Right.
So,
and I think one reason I think those are very good is they'll get to the author, like, what was the kernel of the idea for this book, and how you brought it to fruition.
Yeah.
And
it's been really wonderful. They just were going to start it about being, you know, librarians and this and that, and then somehow somebody asked about an author, so they reached out, they got him, and it's just grown since then.
And that'll be a wrap for this edition of What's the Frequency. Thanks to my two guests for the show. We're at the Sioux City Convention Center. The Iowa Library Association is having their state convention in Sioux City for the first time in 21 years, okay? And we had Helen Rigdon, who's the Sioux City Library Director, on for the show, and also Sam Helmick, who is the Community and Access Services Coordinator for the Iowa City Public Library, and also has the notable post of President for the American Library Association for this year. As we move on for a second year of the show, thanks for being a part of our station as we work every day to tell the stories about Siouxland that inform, entertain, and expand the mind. Thanks for listening, and please join us again next week. What's the Frequency airs on Fridays at 10 a.m. and again on Sundays at 2 p.m. Make sure you also check out a few of our Siouxland Public Media music shows that air at 10 p.m. as we have Hip Hop Chronicles on Thursdays, Mixtape Dance Party on Fridays, and 10 o'clock Blues on Saturdays. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Brett Hayworth.